I reckon I've got it beautifully spelled out phonetically. Let's see if I can actually nail it this time.
Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to episode 42 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company. Well, actually, this is a little different. We're talking to what is effectively a product spin-off of a company that's doing great things around the world of open source Kubernetes management. And this product works as one of, if not the leading, Kubernetes integrated development environment or IDE out there. That company is Mariantis. The product name is Lens. And I'm talking to Miska Kaipiani, VP of Engineering, Product Strategy and Open Source at Mariantis. Welcome to the show, Miska.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's awesome. That was a bit of a mouthful to get out, but we got there, Rob. This is going to be a really interesting episode because, you know, not all only are we going to talk about Lens and what it's doing in the open source world of Kubernetes IDE. We're going to talk a little bit about a company that's been at the forefront of that sort of alternate platform world, open source, Kubernetes management, containerization and whatnot, Mariantis. But just before we get into that, I just want to give a quick shout out to Great Things with Great Tech. So if you'd like to feature on future episodes of Great Things with Great Tech and like what you hear, you can click on the link on the show notes or go to launch.jtwgt.com and register your interest. All episodes of JTWGT are on all good podcasting platforms, Google, Apple, Spotify, all hosted and distributed by anchor.fm. And also, the new website has been launched. It's launched this year for the season 2022. So there's a beautiful new page there, new show notes, new everything. So please check out jtwgt.com. All right, Miska, with all that said and done, let's talk about Mariantis first, where you work, because obviously it's a company that you're currently working for. You've been there for a couple of years, and we'll talk a little bit about how you ended up at Mariantis, working on Lens, focusing on the open source engineering side of things at the company. But Mariantis is a pretty interesting company, and certainly one that I've known about for the last 10 or so years. I remember first looking at it when I was looking at OpenStack, because effectively that's where Mariantis started. So I know, you know, you weren't there specifically at the beginning, but maybe give a little bit of an overview as to what Mariantis does and how it started in that OpenStack world, led itself into containerization, and today where the company is.
Absolutely. So Mariantis, as you said, it's very well known for its OpenStack. So we have very strong roots in there. We were one of the, I believe, one of the this OpenStack Alliance kind of founding members even back in the days. And so that's also naturally where we have a very big kind of customer base also around OpenStack. I would say maybe today we are one of the leading companies when it comes to OpenStack. And for these big enterprises who are looking for virtualization solutions for their data centers. So that's basically the early parts of Mirantis. And of course, when Mirantis acquired Docker Enterprise, that's when Mirantis kind of officially entered in this container business space. And and that's basically the history part that I'm kind of aware of.
Yeah. So interesting enough, so obviously focusing on OpenStack to start with, which was, you know, for the longest time sort of dubbed as the next big platform after, you know, VMware and developer platform and whatnot. So there was a point there, obviously, where Mariantis probably saw that this wasn't going the way that they had thought. But that said, Mariantis had a great deal of, you know, raising rounds. Like I believe that it was five rounds at about 220 million. So absolutely no shortage of investor interest in the company, right? And a number of series of rounds of funding. So the other interesting thing that I kind of found out in my research, the parallels between what some Kubernetes companies are doing, well, most Kubernetes companies actually are doing now with regards to education. Mariantis, you know, was really big on the training and education around OpenStack, which is quite interesting. So, you know, is that parallel correct in terms of saying that, you know, where containerization in Kubernetes is now, is kind of where OpenStack thought that it could have been?
Actually, just Just one thing to notice that OpenStack is not dead.
Actually, I know it's not dead. I know it's not dead. In fact, I've had a couple of companies dealing directly in OpenStack on the show, right? So I know that it's not dead. However, it's definitely not where I think they thought it was going to be. Do you know what I mean? In terms of adoption.
Yeah. And of course, it's not kind of at the top of the hype kind of curve at the
exactly.
moment. So, but sure. That's basically these container technologies that we acquired with Mirantis. Of course, that was also seen in the market. And if you look at the Mirantis customers back in that day, so they were also looking for these container orchestration solutions at that time. So it kind of felt as a natural fit to the portfolio of the products to complement. And that's how these products are still today. So there are many companies who built their own data centers, and as an underlying kind of fabric, they want to run OpenStack, and on top of this OpenStack fabric, they run Kubernetes orchestration platforms, and that's, I think it's a very good kind of combination, and that's what we are also doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we fast forward to 2019, because that's when Mirantis, you know, basically launches the Mirantis Kubernetes engine, you know, formerly the Docker Enterprise. That was the first release after the acquisition of Docker Enterprise. You know, that's kind of when, were you kind of starting to be involved in the company at that point as part of your previous company Container, or just explain the relationship a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I was running the engineering for that product also. So that Mirantis Kubernetes engine. So I know very much about that particular product. So we got acquired by Mirantis. So I had my own startup, and we have been creating container technologies with my startup earlier, but we ran out of funding. And we kind of felt that what to do next, should we go look for additional funding or what should we do? But actually we found out that the most logical choice for us is to join forces with some bigger force. Mm-hmm. And we actually had discussions with multiple different well-known companies in this business space, but we felt very strong connection with Mirantis and the kind of attitude Mirantis had towards the market. So we wanted to join with Mirantis, and I kind of very soon found myself being leading the engineering efforts around the Mirantis Kubernetes engine and all those related products.
So, okay, so that's interesting, because obviously that's a certain stream. That's like, you know, obviously the monetization stream, the enterprise stream of Mirantis sort of thing. But you obviously had been working on another bit of technology at Container. And really, from what I understand, the aim of what you were trying to achieve was trying to create some sort of orchestration engine for containerization. So even forgetting Kubernetes as such, was that the genesis of the work that led up to Lens?
Yes. So if we think about origin of Lens, we started our own startup back in 2014 or 2015. I can't recall it right. Maybe 2015, early 2015. So just after Docker, just kind of starting to get a little bit kind of more known name. Before that, I was using Docker starting from version 0.6 maybe. In my previous kind of company, we tried to do something similar like what Heroku was building, kind of a PaaS platform. Okay. for our internal use. So then that idea kind of was the origin for us to start actually our own company. And so we started Container to build the most developer-friendly, let's say, container orchestration platform. And of course, we need to realize that at that time, Kubernetes was not the thing. So it was nothing, basically, at that time. So we had Swarm, we had a very beautiful product, Mesosphere. And those were kind of the inspirations, of course, for us, and also Heroku, and trying to put our own twist in the mix, how to make it more, even more developer friendly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how we started creating our own orchestration technology. But then soon we realized that any great technology, in order for it to succeed, you also need to make it super kind of user friendly. So we ended up actually building what we felt kind of the most beautiful user interface that people could have for container orchestration.
And it's very important to mention at this point, it's still container orchestration. Okay, so we're totally not talking about Kubernetes just yet. It's purely containers at this point.
Exactly. And it was originally for our own orchestration technology, this user interface that what we have in Lens today. So that's where the work started. We started creating this user interface for our own orchestration technology. But of course, you know, when the time goes on and Kubernetes actually started to become a thing, we also felt that, hey, if Kubernetes is the thing, that's fine, you know, for us. We are not kind of wanting to limit ourselves only to work with Kubernetes or the orchestration technology that we have developed in-house, you know, ourselves, but let's just rather build on top of Kubernetes. And so the first version of Lens for Kubernetes was released, I think it was in 2018 or
okay. So. Yeah. Okay. And so Mariantis, so obviously what happened was you container and then you guys kind of got sucked into a people and technology acquisition as such to Mariantis to basically then drive Lens through an open source initiative. Is that sort of the genesis of how, you know, you came to be under the Mariantis brand?
Well, actually, no, because originally it was more about the team. So it was not even so much about, you know, Lens or something like that, because we need to also realize that Lens was not so big as it is today, you know, at the time when we joined with Mirandis. It was just, of course, it was a beautiful, you know, user interface.
A little side project.
Yeah, but it was just like a side project. And actually, for the very early days when we joined Mirandis, so Mirandis has nothing to do with Lens. So it was kind of later on we brought Lens into the mix.
Yeah, that's the order, right? So the people first, and then Lens came in. Just before we get into a little bit about Lens specifically, what it does, I think it's important to understand something that we touched on earlier, which was an IDE for developers as opposed to operations, right? So traditionally, a lot of these containerization management platforms, the Mesospheres, the Swarms, the stuff that you talked about, they were, from my point of view, there for infrastructure and operations guys to be able to build clusters, platforms, and manage them. But what you saw was that you needed IDE, so a development interface sort of for the developers that are working on Kubernetes to do their thing more efficiently. So maybe just explain why, you know, the focus for Lens has been on the developers as opposed to the operations guy, which is usually how these things kind of go.
Yeah, well, I think the explanation is quite simple, because if you think about that, any kind of big organization, they might have, let's say, big organization, they might have, let's say, 10 clusters. And those 10 clusters are probably created by 20 people in that company. So all these technologies and tools that you are trying to build for, let's say, operators or ops people, so you are basically targeting those 20 people. At the same time, these 10 clusters might be kind of consumed by 1,000 developers who have actually, they have to work with this stuff that these ops guys have been deciding for their company. So they are in trouble. Before Lens, they had nothing. They only had kubectl because they don't often have access to these tools that the ops guys are using, because they are for kind of system level management, and they can see kind of multi-cluster, you know, views on what is in their infrastructure and stuff like that. Devs don't have any of those tools. So, and that's, I think, also the big kind of thing behind Lensing and why it has become so popular, is the fact that it's kind of filling this gap that is in the market, that yes, there are great tools for multi-cluster managers, for operators. So you can use ranchers, so you can use whatnot. Yeah. So we have, with Mirantis, we have also products for those operators. But yeah, for consumers, let's say Kubernetes consumers who are actually the developers who need to develop their applications against the Kubernetes, there was nothing before Lens. And I still think that there are very few kind of meaningful solutions for developers besides kubectl, of course.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, obviously developers. I think I've said that in a couple of episodes at the moment, in the last few episodes, right? But the developer community, from what I see, especially around open source, around cloud native, around Kubernetes, they really drive this groundswell of community access, of starring projects on GitHub, of forking GitHub projects, the open source projects, because that's where their minds are at. Operators, platform guys aren't at that sort of level of groundswell that I see. So from what I've understood and what you've talked about, Lens's popularity is driven by the fact that this is an idea for developers. Therefore, it's getting that community support that I see more and more as I branch out from my traditional infrastructure platform world and moving into, you know, the cloud native open source developer world. It's a different beast. So I think from what I'm hearing, that's where you've been able to get serious traction.
Yeah, absolutely right. So we have been doing all kind of, you know, we have been trying to do also marketing, you know, in the past, actually not anymore, because we found out that it actually doesn't matter what we do on the marketing front. So we can try to do everything or we can do nothing. Still, you know, the growth for Lens user base that remains, you know, it's the same exponential curve no matter what we do.
So, yeah. That's legitimately organic, tell your friend type of growth. The growth hack, exactly. everyone wants, right? But you said you didn't have that early. So at what point did the inflection point happen where you started to sort of grow?
Yeah, so of course we didn't get Lens right from beginning. So we have been doing many mistakes kind of, or let's say not mistakes, but we have been learning a lot. So originally the Lens was a web-based solution, and it was something that people had to actually install in their clusters. So it was like a web UI for your cluster.
Okay, I get you. Yeah.
So that was the very first version of Lens. We kind of were very surprised because we got a lot of traffic to the website where we were promoting this thing. So people kind of were seemingly very excited about this idea. But then basically conversion from these website visitors to actually people installing that to actually use it, it was like nothing, you know. I think we get all together like 14 people.
Okay.
14. So it was like ridiculous. So then we quite soon we realized that, hey, and that was the biggest, perhaps the aha moments we ever had with Lens. We realized that Lens users don't have cluster admin rights, and by nature, they don't want to install anything in their clusters.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest aha moment, because that kind of put us thinking that, okay, how can we provide this kind of beautiful user experience to our users without them having the need to install anything in their clusters? So that's the point where we actually started working on the desktop version of Lens.
Which in itself is it's a bit like, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but it's a bit backwards in terms of the trend today of, you know, there's a desktop version and then obviously you then move it to a SaaS or web-based version of your product. Yeah. And that said, things like, I think of it today, like things like Slack, what else? I'm just looking at my desktop here. What else have I got? You know, Teams, all these sorts of things that are more, you're more involved with and you want to have an experience in and you're in every day. If you want to get the full better experience, you do install a desktop application. So maybe it's not around the wrong way for what it is, but definitely I think from an IDE sort of web console point of view, it does seem that the desktop app is not the way to do it. So is it because it's an IDE that this works as opposed to being just a web application?
Yeah, so I think the fact is that if we put ourselves into the shoes of employee number 10,028 working for a big enterprise who only has been given from their enterprise ID, they have been given a kubeconfig file. So we need to make something that works for this guy, for this particular employee. So first of all, they can't probably, or it's illegal even for them to start, you know, submitting this kubeconfig file, which might potentially contain some secrets to some SaaS service to provide some. Okay. And plus this cluster, you know, is probably not even reachable from this SaaS service.
Absolutely.
So the only place where you can actually access this cluster is on this developer's machine, who might need to even additionally open some VPN connections and stuff like that. And this user cannot install anything onto this cluster. He's a rookie. He's just a junior developer there. No.
Don't give him too much rope. He might break something. Yet.
Yeah. So, but we want to make life beautiful for that guy, for that employee. And that's we have to remind also ourselves that that's the kind of core user base of Lens users. So they are not necessarily those cluster admins, because they have so many different options because they can install whatever they want into their clusters.
Yes, I definitely was one of those guys with admin rights everywhere. Yeah, I never felt any pain because I could install anything everywhere, right? So
yeah.
I absolutely understand that. And you know what? You've just, you've just basically given the value prop for this product beautifully, I think. I get it now. I mean, I think I got it before, obviously, but what you just, you know, said there made it crystal clear as to why this product exists, why it exists in its current form. So that's great in itself. So just on that, so, you know, why is an IDE important for Kubernetes?
Well, Kubernetes, of course, it's a sexy new thing, and all the new developers, they would like to get in the project where Kubernetes is being used. But, then when you read some articles, so everybody's saying that, yeah, it's super difficult. And of course, I don't think, by the way, that it's Kubernetes is actually so difficult. It's just the lack of tooling. So if you don't have anything like Lens, so then of course it's going to be incredibly difficult because you have no clue what's happening. You know, you are basically blindfolded. You are putting in commands to some black box that is then doing something, and it's very difficult.
You just explain Kubernetes like straight up in terms of my experience trying to actually get to the moment where I was comfortable to go, I think I know what's going on. It's kind of the same. It's got like storage, security, networking, applications, workloads, but it's so different. And there's just this element of the unknown, which you still don't kind of understand. So you've hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. So I think it's just that you need to have a good kind of observability, kind of, so that you can, and then you need to have a safe kind of playground where you can go practice and, you know, to get confidence in kind of working with Kubernetes. It's not so hard, you know. Everybody can learn it very quickly. And,
yeah. You mentioned observability, obviously very important to understand what's going on easily and quickly. Development as well. So that's kind of where Lens comes into play as well, because you know you've been able to build a couple of things into the. You've got team spaces. You've got some multi-cluster management. So maybe just explain some of the core. I think up to version 5.4 of Lens, is that right at the moment?
5.4 is the latest one, yes.
It's the latest bit, yeah. So maybe just explain the core features and components of it that make it special as well, apart from just what you've explained.
Yeah, so, well, of course, the kind of main thing, of course, with Lens is this kind of the 360 degrees of observability for anything that goes on in your clusters. And, of course, with Lens, the multi-cluster management part. So, again, from this end user's point of view, this employee number, what was the number? 10,024,
I think. So, yeah, we'll go back.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that guy. So he might have access also to multiple clusters. So he has been given, you know, multiple kubeconfig files to work with. So you can put all those kubeconfig files in Lens, and no matter what is the flavor of Kubernetes, whether it's your mini cubes or whether it's something from your corporate IT or ops guys. Doesn't matter, you put those kubeconfig files in Lens and you get the same unified look and feel observability to all your clusters super easily. So that's the kind of core part of Lens, of course. So what we have been lately adding is also kind of teamwork and collaboration capabilities in Lens. So this same guy, this employee, he might be working in a team, and their DevOps leader might be wanting to make it life for himself more easy. And so with the use of Lens Spaces, which is a new feature in Lens, so team leads can create kind of a collaborative space where they can actually start inviting the team members into this space where they are automatically then getting access to these certain clusters kind of in a centralized fashion so that they don't need to start sharing these kubeconfig files anymore.
How does that work? Does that work from the point of view of it goes off to some sort of central web service or something, and then there's a proxy that kind of connects everything together?
Yes, that's kind of on a very, very, very high level, it goes like that. But basically what happens under the hood is that there will be a component that gets to be installed in your cluster. And then there is this proxy component. And we are basically providing a secure end-to-end tunneling from the cluster to these individual end users' machines.
Okay.
So we are doing all that automatic. So we try to just improve the security for those guys that they don't need to share kubeconfig files anymore to gain access to these clusters. Let's say more secure way.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. That's a good feature. Because I've seen that as part of my work with it, but I haven't needed to dive into it. Right. So. Yeah, that's a very good collaborative feature, very much akin to how Visual Studio, you know, kind of does its thing and shares its spaces and whatnot. And then you've got obviously DevOps Care. So that's something that I've picked up, you know, lately. That's an initiative more than sort of a thing. Maybe explain that.
Yeah, it's more like a service offering. So of course we have kind of very strong background with Mirandis providing services, and what we have been finding out that we are on a mission, of course, to accelerate our users to take advantage of these investments they have made for the container kind of orchestration platforms and whatnot. So DevOps Care is aimed for those guys who don't necessarily have kind of very strong DevOps kind of capabilities in their own organization, or they are afraid of employees changing jobs and it's sometimes very difficult to also retain talent. So
yeah, I was having this conversation today about this world, the developer world. It's a very what's the word? Mercenary like world where people will switch between companies at a drop of a hat. So yeah, maybe I'm selling the whole industry short there, but I've worked with developers, interacted with them almost all my career, so I've got a good feel for kind of how they are. But yeah,
so for those type of situations, so we have been seeing many of these situations where you know, there has been this, you know, these superhero type of guys who go into some enterprise and they are the only guys who have been setting up some kind of CI/CD pipelines, for example, for an enterprise, but then suddenly they leave and, you know, there is nobody basically who knows what these super guys have been, you know, superheroes have been doing. It's just a magical that used to work and now it's gone. And so what we try to do with the DevOps Care is to try to fill the gap that the organizations might be having with their DevOps capability with intention to help them accelerate to get the value out from their container, whatever it is, by the way. It has nothing to do with Mirantis offering, so we can happily work with the guys who are using EKS or whatever.
Cool.
Just to take more advantage of those platforms.
Understand. Yeah. So on that, talk a little bit about the dev cluster that you got, the managed dev cluster. So this is an interesting one because from what I've seen, it's a paid service where you can, you know, basically leverage some sort of managed Kubernetes for tinkering, playing, development, whatever you want to do. So how does that work?
Yeah. So for the time being, so this dev cluster, it's a managed service from us. So the intention in there is to provide clusters that are optimized for development purposes with basically click of a button. And I would say that it's more than just with the click of a button. So what we try to do with these dev clusters is that it basically behaves like your laptop. So if the developer goes away from his laptop, this dev cluster will automatically go into kind of sleeping mode.
Okay.
And when the developer comes back, the cluster also kind of wakes up. And we try to make this super seamless. And the intention in here is that we have hundreds of developers here at Mirantis. And what we can see happening is that they are now, they used to have all their kind of dev environments they are running in AWS infrastructure, for example.
Yeah, it costs money.
But actually, the cloud spend is huge because those clusters, they are always tagging them with the pet tags, so they will never get cleaned up with any kind of jobs because they hate to set those machines up again.
Yeah.
So the cloud spend for that is actually quite huge, massive. So now we can get rid of all that because with the dev clusters, actually those dev clusters are only available when the developers are actually needing those dev clusters.
Okay. So is that something that you guys are hosting yourselves? Or is that a service that you guys
That's what we are doing. And of course, the idea it's no secret, we are running these dev clusters on AWS for all of our users. We have been having a little bit of challenges in there because of the huge scale of usage for this. But the idea is that in the future, we want to also allow our users to bring their own AWS credentials.
Okay. Yeah.
So that we can handle this automation. So you can just connect your own AWS credentials and we just manage the kind of cluster creation part and then monitoring this kind of lifetime, you know, waking it up, shutting it down, automatically.
Yeah, that's brilliant, to be fair. Like even for me, who likes to tinker on Kubernetes platforms, do a bit here and there. That's awesome, right? Because again, you're right. I've been on a constant mission to find the perfect Kubernetes development environment to be able to play with and tinker with, and you know, just use when I need to sort of do a little bit here to do some learning. In my case, anyway. So that's quite interesting. So just the numbers, because we haven't really talked about this. So let's talk a little bit about the lens, like in terms of the community. In terms of the actual active users that you guys have of the application or the service, yeah, what are your numbers at the moment?
I think I'm not looking at it on a daily basis, but I think last time I was checking it, like maybe a week or two ago. So we just broke 500,000 users.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, it was just I think 2 weeks ago when we broke this 500,000 users mark.
That's a crazy number. That's a big number. That's nothing to nothing to crow about. That's huge.
Yeah, and just, you know, some users you are using, users who are using it on a daily basis, it's also somewhere around, you know, 100,000, 120,000 users. So it's a huge kind of, course, we need to realize that there are people who are using it not on a daily basis, but they are maybe using it on a weekly basis or so. But we have, yeah, daily users somewhere in a 100K range today.
That's awesome. That's, and actually, if you look at it, that's like 100 out of 500. It's one fifth. That's not bad in terms of people that have actively downloaded it versus the DAUs.
That's crazy. Good. That's actually you know, explodes my head every time when I look at those numbers.
It speaks very well to what you talked about in terms of the core persona you were chasing with this, and the fact that it was a developer as opposed to the operator, because there's not that many operators out there. The operators are a smaller number relative to the developers in the world, right? So that's what I think is reflective there. But to that end, there's still obviously operators who see advantages in this. I'm one of these guys that sees advantages in using it regardless, right? So you don't need to be just a developer to use it. You can obviously be an operator, and it can simplify and make more efficient your daily interactions with different Kubernetes clusters. I just want to finish off just by talking about Kubernetes in general. I told you this was going to go very quickly and we're going to get into some crazy time frame, but what's your take on where Kubernetes is today in its adoption versus, and maybe answer that relative to enterprise uptake?
Well, I guess I keep on repeating this, you know, this is the year. This is the year. I think we have been saying this for a long time in this industry, that this is the year, you know, when Kubernetes becomes mainstream. I think it's there, but truly the adoption, we are at the large scale, we are just kind of getting started, I would say. If we look at the deployments of software that is out there, it's still a small fraction of software that runs on Kubernetes compared to anything else. So that's where we are. So there is still kind of a lot of work to be done. But Kubernetes as a platform, of course, has been getting more mature. Of course, every now and then we are still finding all sorts of gaps in Kubernetes itself, but I would say that the hype cycle, also the hype curve, is kind of calming down, and it's kind of getting now to the point where
it's been quite an elongated top of that hype curve with Kubernetes. I feel like we've been talking, I know that personally, you know, we've been talking, I can remember being talked about it by Kit Colbert, the CTO of VMware. Well, he wasn't the CTO back then. But in 2016, he mentioned and talked about this thing called Kubernetes, how it's going to be the next big thing. Yeah, and that's now 6 years ago. You know what I mean? So it's interesting how we've gotten to that point slowly. And I feel like that curve, it's just kind of, it's kind of sitting there. The roller coaster's kind of stuck and it's about to, it wants to go down, but it just can't quite go down at the moment. So I feel like we're nearly there, because we obviously, I've had a number of different, in the year, almost 2 years that I've been doing this podcast, I've had quite a number of Kubernetes related conversations with people. So it's definitely front and center, but I think it's front and center in a certain area of the IT world. And it's when it breaks that main stage, bigger enterprise adoption, as to when it becomes, you know, more mainstream and accepted. And then we can go on to the next thing.
Yep. Whatever, absolutely. Yeah, so I think it's anyway, the kind of role of Kubernetes is, people kind of start realizing, it's just a middleware, you know, the value, you know, Kubernetes by itself does nothing, you know, for me. So actually it's everything else, you know, that runs on top of Kubernetes that actually where the, that's the most valuable part. And
that's where you guys come in as well, because you help enable that absolutely with Lens. Yeah. All right, two questions to finish off. The first one is one I always ask, you know, when I get people on, is that what was it about, you know, Lens that was innovative and that disrupted the market initially to get it to build up to, you know, that 500K, 100K daily active users?
Well, I think we touched upon that also. I think it was just the fact that we found, kind of, we got this aha moment, realizing that actually, you know, we don't want to build something for these ops guys only, that are these 20 people who are cluster admins and you know, who are in a very privileged position. So instead, try to solve problem for these actual people who are struggling with. So those guys who are, don't have cluster admin rights, who are just given with some kubeconfig files. And I think that's the kind of real differentiation and unique thing.
Excellent. And to follow up from that, so how are you going to continue to, number one, internally disrupt yourselves? Because obviously being technology companies, you want to disrupt yourselves. But then how are you going to continually disrupt this space? As mainstream adoption comes up, which means more and more people and more traditional companies will look to, you know, edge in on the space, so to speak. So how are you going to keep, you know, Lens front and center?
Well, of course, we also want to a little bit expand the use cases for Lens also perhaps a little bit beyond Kubernetes. There are kind of very close, let's say, technologies that very much relate to Kubernetes, but we would like to expand the capabilities of Lens, for example, to serve a bigger kind of use cases. That's, I believe, all I can say about.
Well, that's about good. That. No, I think that's good. That's a juicy one. You heard it almost first here, and when that comes out, that's awesome. I'm really looking forward to, you know, where you take this. It's clear the growth. It's taken hold. It's riding a bit of a wave as well, which is obviously a good thing where you want to be from a technology point of view, and definitely, you know, the epitome of doing something great things with great tech. Awesome. Let's wrap up there because, you know, it's been a great conversation. We've covered a ton. In terms of where they can get more information, Miska, do you want to just maybe tell people where they can get more information about Lens and about Mariantis, apart from the obvious places?
Yeah, well, of course, the website, I believe, you know, that's where everybody will do anyway, you know.
That's
you
it.
Just type in, yeah, just put in Google Lens Kubernetes and or just directly go to kateslens.dev, our website. So
that's the one. So kateslens.dev. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then obviously follow on Twitter and whatnot. All right. No worries. Let's wrap up. So just in wrapping up, I just want to make sure that if, again, listeners out there, if you're not subscribed and you're new to the show and you like what you hear, you can subscribe to us in any podcast client or catch up at the brand new gtwgt.com website. So with that, thank you, Miska. Thank you, Mariantis/Lens. And we will see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech. All right. Beautiful. Good.
That's a wrap.